Mike Schuster, NPR News, Baghdad.
Amtrak trains are running again in the busy Northeast Corridor, but there are lingering delays after a shutdown of Amtrak and some commuter rail service between New York and Washington for an hour at the height of rush hour because of power problems. The man who wrote that theme song to the 1950s children's TV hit The Howdy Doody Show has died. Edward Keene was 85. He also wrote a popular line used by a character on the show, Chief Thunderthud.
Cowabunga!
That line gained new fame when Bart Simpson adopted it.
Cowabunga, dude!
The Howdy Doody Show aired on NBC through 1960. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org.
For more than 150 years, Asian Americans have worked to make a place for themselves in the United States.
Being Asian American or being Korean American is really a complex experience. It's not about speaking Korean or living in Koreatown or being down for some cause.
It's the University Laboratory High School and Illinois Public Media production, From East to West, journeying through the lives of Asian Americans in Champaign-Urbana, Saturday, August 28th at 6 p.m.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. 52 nations around the world, including all of the members of the EU, have either banned or restricted the use of asbestos as a result of its cancer-causing qualities. However, in many places around the world, particularly in developing countries, asbestos continues to be used, and public health officials are very concerned about this. In fact, they have estimated that something like 125 million workers around the world, this is the World Health Organization has done this, has estimated that 125 million workers around the world are exposed to asbestos on a regular basis. And the International Labor Organization says that about 100,000 workers die from asbestos-related causes every year. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking about the international trade in asbestos. And our guest for the program is Dave Kaplan. He is director of the Center for Public Integrity's International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. The consortium, back in the fall of 2009, began looking into the global trade in asbestos. And as a result of a long investigation, which they did in conjunction with some reporters and producers at the BBC, they have produced a report that was just made public about a month ago. The title is Dangers in the Dust Inside the Global Asbestos Trade. And you can see more about this if you go to the website of the BBC. You can also go to the website of the Center for Public Integrity, and you can read the reporting that they have done. And we'll be talking about that this morning in this hour of the show. And certainly questions from people who are listening are welcome. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest, David Kaplan. He's director of the Center's International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. He's been involved with the center since 1999. He has reported for more than two dozen countries. He's been a reporter for a long time and has investigated organized crime, terrorist groups, corporate polluters, among others. He worked as editorial director of the center. He has also been chief investigative correspondent for U.S. News and World Report. He was one of two senior editors at the San Francisco-based Center for Investigative Reporting. He is a former Fulbright scholar in Japan. His books include Yakuza, which is widely considered to be the standard reference on the Japanese mafia. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, of course, questions are welcome. We hope to have people calling in. They do keep it to a question, try to keep it brief, keep it on the topic. That way we can make as much room for different callers as possible and keep our program moving along. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And you may also send along your questions by email. Just go to will-talk@illinois.edu. And Mr. Kaplan, hello.
Hi, pleasure to be with you.
Well, thanks very much for giving us your time. We certainly do appreciate it. Maybe I could start off by just asking you, why did the center, the consortium, decide to take on this particular subject?
Good question. You know, it started as a relatively small project here. A freelancer who had actually been on staff here, Jim Morris, came to us. He'd done a lot of coverage of occupational health and safety issues, of environmental issues. He'd been asking around his sources, saying, "Yeah, you got any good news stories?" And some scientists said, "You know, you really ought to look at the export of asbestos. It's largely been forgotten in the West because of litigation, because of safety standards. The industry's pretty well a shadow of its former self, but it's being exported overseas to fast-growing countries like China, India, and Brazil, and they're going to repeat exactly the mistakes that the West made, and they're going to have epidemics overseas." Mm-hmm. So we started looking at it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about who the big exporters are, and apparently the biggest is Russia, but interestingly enough, here in our part of the world, also a big producer of asbestos, surprisingly enough, is Canada.
And there's a big debate up there now, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And most of that comes out of just two mines that are located in the province of Quebec. And they are a big exporter, and as is the case probably in some other places, they're big exporters, but hardly any of it ends up being used in Canada.
Almost all of it is exported overseas, about half of it to India, in fact. And to our surprise, we found that the government, both at the federal and provincial level, subsidizes the industry. So Canadian tax money is supporting the export of a known carcinogen, which the World Health Organization says there's really no safe limit of exposure to.
Yeah, the industry, I think that they have said that first of all, they would say, well, you know, there are different forms of asbestos. The ones that pose the most serious threat to health, we don't use those anymore. But the one that is commonly used now, the white asbestos, they would say, the industry would say, as long as this is handled in an appropriate manner, that it's not a problem. Is there, in fact, a consensus in the scientific community that it is a problem?
We found pretty broad consensus, except for some industry-backed scientists, white asbestos, the only kind used today, is very much a hazard, a potent carcinogen, and its use, in fact, has been banned entirely in the European Union and is sharply restricted here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
The blue and brown asbestos, other forms, are not used anymore. There is some scientific controversy over whether it might, in fact, be more toxic than white. But they're all, again, potent carcinogens. I think that there's broad scientific consensus on that. Mm. The debate really focuses on whether you can protect workers and others who come into contact with asbestos in places like India and China. So we did on-the-ground field reporting in those places. We went to the center of India's asbestos industry in Gujarat State. We had people on the ground in China. We toured shops selling asbestos products in Brazil, and we found conditions were pretty dismal.
Yeah.
And it tended to support what activists say is that you cannot export this amount of asbestos to developing countries with poor safety and environmental records and not expect to have an epidemic.
Yeah, and it seems pretty clear that the big problem with asbestos comes when it ends up, as a result of how it's being handled and processed and worked with, it ends up in a form that could be easily inhaled by people. So that's why it is that the people who are at greatest risk always have been people who work with it in an industrial way. So either we're talking about people who mine it or maybe live around the mine, and then also people who process it. For example, in this country, some of the people who were at greatest risk were people who work with auto brakes because for a long time they used asbestos. And in the developing world, it seems that people who are involved in the manufacture of building materials that use asbestos, they're the ones that are at greatest risk.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's too bad. You know, asbestos really is a kind of a miracle mineral. When people first started using it for in industrial uses, it was amazing. The thing is, you can't burn it. It's resistant to heat. It's strong as can be. So industry found lots and lots of uses for it in shipbuilding, in insulation, in roofing materials, for brake pads, but since the 20s and 30s, the science started to appear, showing that there was a pretty direct relationship of various serious diseases to asbestos, particularly, as you say, linked to workers who were in direct contact with it. And we started seeing epidemics in the West of mesothelioma, a disease that usually strikes the linings of the lungs, of asbestos-related cancers, particularly in the lungs, and asbestosis. This has killed hundreds of thousands of people in the United States and in Europe. The studies we saw suggesting extrapolating its use were pretty extraordinary. Cumulatively, it looks like if the predictions are correct, by the year 2030, 5 to 10 million people worldwide will have died from asbestos-related diseases. And this is increasingly in developing countries.
Yeah, it's a staggering number. And I'm sure that not only does it involve people who handle it because of their work, but I'm sure that if this work is being done in countries where there are poor controls on environmental pollution generally, that also people, if you happen to live next door or you lived in the neighborhood of a factory that was somehow processing asbestos, then you would also be at increased risk there too.
Yeah, and in fact, we found situations just like that in India and in Mexico. We put together an eight-nation team of journalists who looked at this in as many countries. And for example, there's a factory in Mexico which uses, I think, 10 times as much asbestos as does the United States right now. And it's right in the middle of an urban neighborhood, school kids buying ice cream cones outside, neighbors complaining of pollution from the factory and of the inability of local officials to properly regulate the company. The company says it's done nothing wrong and complies with regulations, but it's certainly a controversy down there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that, say, if you go back to the attitude of the people in the government of Canada, for example, when they talk about export of the product, they say something like, well, there is, if the product is, it has been demonstrated that if the product is appropriately and safely handled, there are no health threats. So then the question becomes, well, in the places that we're talking about, is the regulation so lax that it would not be possible for that level of appropriate handling to be in place?
Well, what we saw in our reporting was pretty much an abject lack of safety and protection equipment. The industry certainly in India is decentralized. There's lots of mom and pop stores that deal with this stuff. There's hundreds of factories that are loosely regulated. There are workers who claim that they've got asbestos related diseases that can't get their claims honored. And what independent scientists tell us is there's a huge new wave of an asbestos-related epidemic that is going to appear in countries like India, like China, like Brazil, because the industry has targeted those places with a product that is now banned or sharply restricted in 52 countries.
Yeah. We're talking this morning in this hour of Focus with Dave Kaplan. He is director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. This is a program of the Center for Public Integrity, and we're talking about a reporting project that the center was involved with, or the consortium was involved with, that also involved a number of reporters and producers from the BBC, Dangers in the Dust Inside the Global Asbestos Trade, which takes a look at the fact that while in the cancer-causing risks of exposure to asbestos have been widely acknowledged around the world, and as he just mentioned, there are 52 countries that have either banned or restricted the use of asbestos, it is still widely used in the developing world, and that there are some countries, among them Canada, who are big exporters of asbestos, and a lot of it ends up going to the developing world. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Maybe I should have you talk about the raw asbestos that ends up being shipped to places like India, for example, or China, or Mexico, or other places. What's done with it?
Well, again, it's a very versatile substance. It's used for insulation. It's used in roofing because the fibers are so strong. It's relatively cheap. Industry has found many uses for it. The problem is, you know, again, in the mining, in the processing, in things like brake linings. It used to be used widely to in friction products like brakes, so that the brakes didn't heat up, they wouldn't catch fire, they wouldn't wear out as quickly. And mechanics in the U.S. used to just go in there with a blower, you know, like a vacuum, and get out the asbestos fibers. They didn't have any protection. That's actually the latest wave of lawsuits in the U.S. It's thousands of mechanics who worked on vehicles and were never told that this stuff was potentially deadly. Now they know better.
Yeah.
And new cars do not use asbestos. And this is one of the big arguments that is taking place worldwide. There are other substances that are acceptable substitutes. They cost a little more than asbestos. So why is the industry exporting raw asbestos by huge amounts to developing countries, and why are the developing countries using it at such a prodigious rate? China has become the world's top consumer of asbestos. In India, we found the rate of use was growing at 30% annually. This has potentially disastrous health implications.
And is it, I guess it was my understanding that in a lot of places, in addition to the kinds of things that you've said, and again, going back to the fact that it's not only is it, does it have all these really positive properties, it's strong, it resists heat and fire, that it's also pretty cheap, that it ends up being one of the big applications is in building materials, things that then can be used to build housing. It has these advantages, and it's a cheap material.
Right, right. And these are good selling points for the industry. I think there was a calculation made in the West, in most of the industrial world, that this stuff, while very useful for various purposes, just had health costs that were unacceptable. You know, the U.S. has never banned asbestos. It's still legal to use here. The EU has banned its sale entirely. But in true American fashion, we kind of litigated it to death. The industry incurred billions and billions of dollars in litigation costs, and has basically was bankrupted in the U.S. So because through our legal system, there were so many challenges made, it's just not used very much in the States anymore.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller here. Let's talk with them on our line number one right here. Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
Interesting topic. I was an industrial painter for quite a while, and I'm just wondering if the scope of this problem is recognized in the United States just with respect to, like, older plants, older oil refineries, older tank farms, et cetera, where they use asbestos extensively to cover pipes. They go and do maintenance, and you'll see it laying around, and you'll if you sandblast something, it, of course, you send it way into the atmosphere. And do you think that the United States now is really has a handle on the asbestos that's used in the past?
Good question. Certainly, I think industry and scientists and government have all learned in this country, you got to be much more careful with this stuff than we have in the past. Workers didn't have protection. The risks weren't widely recognized. There weren't warning labels put on products. That's all changed. So when workers go in there, they really need to have respirators and masks and proper protection gear. And this is widely known now from mechanics right on up to industrial workers like you who were actually in the plants dealing with this stuff. That the debate now has really shifted overseas. And so you have workers in India and China and Brazil who were back where the U.S. was in the 40s and 50s, without warnings, without protection gear, and the consequences of that, scientists tell us, are going to be quite deadly.
Can I make one other little remark?
Sure, sure.
It's just that I, from my experience with it and how ubiquitous it was in these places and still is, I don't think we're monitoring well at all. Now, OSHA, of course, has only got about 10 inspectors for like every 100,000 million workers and all like that. And I think we're really behind the curve with it in terms of, like, it is like once you put it in the air, it exposes everybody on the work site, say. And so, in a sense, I think it's still sort of a sleeping malign giant in this country. But
well,
thank you.
There's still a lot of litigation here at home in the U.S. Over asbestos one of the things we noticed when we put out our series with the BBC is how many attorney sites picked up this series. So this thing certainly is still of interest to the legal community and trying to hold industry to account and workers claiming that they've come down with asbestos-related diseases. So, yeah, this thing's not over. But I think what we found was that the casualties from the asbestos industry have peaked in the U.S. and in other Western countries. And while we're starting to go down because we've more or less controlled exposure to asbestos, though perhaps not as much as we thought, according to your caller,
Well, the
real damage will be overseas now in developing countries.
Here, I'm just curious. We've talked about the fact that one of the big asbestos-producing nations is Canada, and that there are two. It all comes out of two big mines, and they're in Quebec. Now, here in the United States, I know that in the people who worked in mining asbestos, their families, people who just lived in the town where the mine was, a lot of people have said that they believe that they were made sick as a result of being exposed to that asbestos. One of your reporters, and I think it was actually somebody who was from the BBC, went to Canada and went to the town where the mine is. Are there people there in Canada who live around the Canadian asbestos mines who have said that they thought that they were made sick as a result of living near or around the mine?
Yeah, of course there are, and there's pockets where people develop mesothelioma and other asbestos-related diseases. I think it's pretty well documented in the medical literature at this point that there's a direct relationship and that these communities get hit pretty hard. At the same time, they depend on the industry for their livelihood, so you get a fair bit of support. One of the members of our team went to the town of asbestos. There's actually a place in Canada called asbestos with an asbestos cafe and an asbestos street. And there's still wide support for the industry because they supply hundreds of jobs and people's livelihoods are precious things.
We are just about at our midpoint here. I'll tell you what, I'll go ahead and take another caller, and then I'll reintroduce our guest with this hour, Dave Kaplan. The caller here is in Paris, Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
You was talking about asbestos here in the United States. My son works for a contractor, a roofer. Here a while back, they got into a deal with asbestos shingles. And unfortunately, the employer acted like it was just poo-poo, nothing to worry about. You're outside the open. You don't have to worry about it. Of course, when my son told me that these were asbestos shingles, all the alarm bells went off, and I said, you know, you need to be really, really careful and everything. Is there anybody out there really emphasizing this to roofers and employers that just because it's kind of out of sight and out of mind, it's kind of, it's the same logic as with lead, because lead's a big thing with contractors right now because of some new rules that the government has passed. And, you know, it's just like these guys, I'm concerned for my son, but I'm also concerned for my grandchild because daddy goes home with these clothes on and he can carry it home to the family. So I was just wondering, you know, how much they're really enforcing this or instructing employers, you know, to be careful with their employees. And I'll just listen on air and see what you say. Thank you.
All right. Boy, more good questions. I was the editor of the series. I'm not an expert on U.S. use. I suggest our caller go to www.icij.org, and they'll find our complete series, including a piece on the history of asbestos use in the U.S. and how the warnings have become stronger, but how the controversies and the litigation remains. You know, this is a real issue that in fact you can contract an asbestos-related disease because of what a worker brings home in his or her clothing to the house. And spouses have sued because of diseases they think they've picked up that way. So if you know, people who are working in an asbestos mine, who are doing asbestos removal, these are real dangers. One other thing I can suggest is going to OSHA's site, the federal government, and looking at what the actual regs are, what the warning label should be, and what the protective clothing ought to be.
Let me introduce our guest once again for this hour of Focus 580. We're talking with David Kaplan. He is with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. This is a division of the Center for Public Integrity. And back last fall, the consortium began an international reporting project. It involved reporters in a number of countries around the world, and it was something that they did in conjunction with reporters and producers from the BBC and their international news service. And it was all aimed at looking at asbestos, the global trade in asbestos, something that has been acknowledged as being a carcinogen. And as we've said a couple of times here, it's been either banned or restricted in a lot of countries, more than 50 countries, all of the EU. You might think that as a result, well, asbestos just isn't used anymore. But the fact of the matter is, it is still heavily used in a lot of the world, in the developing world particularly. Russia is the biggest producer of asbestos in the world. Other big producers include China, Canada, and Brazil. And then China also is one of the biggest users of asbestos. So is the country of India. And there is real concern that if more care isn't taken in the use of this product, and I think probably some scientists would say it just should be banned around the world outright, but there have been some scientists, and they report that in this project that we're talking about, who say that by 2030, asbestos could have taken as many as 10 million lives around the world as a result of asbestos-related disease. So again, if you'd like to read on this subject, you can look at Dangers in the Dust Inside the Global Asbestos Trade. And if you go to the website of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or you can also go through the Center for Public Integrity, either way, if you'd like to read it, it is there. And questions are welcome here on the program, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. One of the major features here of the report that you did has to do with how it is that the industry as it exists and is based in Canada has spent a lot of money to keep asbestos being used and has worked with other industry-related organizations in other places around the world to try to continue to promote the use of asbestos and also to counter concerns that it's a health risk.
This was really a key part of our investigation. We were following the money that the industry has spent to promote asbestos around the world, and we found there was more or less a nerve center based in Montreal, Canada, with something called the Chrysotile Institute, which has been pushing the use of asbestos around the world. They, in turn, are in the middle of a network of similar institutes and industry trade groups around the world. We found that collectively the groups have spent nearly $100 million in public and private money since the mid-1980s to keep asbestos in commerce. And this is a major reason we found that while its use is plummeting in the Western industrialized countries, it's skyrocketing in the developing world.
Mm-hmm. This is something that I guess it surprises me a little bit to hear that the government of Canada would be a supporter of this industry. I know that it is true, and you also talk about it in your reporting, however, that there are a lot of Canadians, a lot of people around Canada that are very concerned about this, and they're very unhappy that their government is supporting this industry.
Well, it doesn't really fit with Canada's nice guy image, does it? That they're, some people say they're dumping asbestos on developing countries. After our report came out, in fact, though, the leader of the Canadian opposition, the Liberal Party leader, called for an end to Canada's exports. So it is quite controversial up there. It's tied in part to the politics of Quebec, the French-speaking part of Canada, because that's where the remaining mines are. That's where the industry is. And first rule of Canadian politics, we were told, never do anything to offend the Quebecois. So they don't really want to end an industry that is responsible for hundreds and hundreds of jobs in Quebec province. It's a political issue unique to Canada. But we received lots and lots of coverage up there. Our stories were covered by major Canadian papers, and Canadian Health Association has called for an end to the exports now as well. So I think we haven't seen the last of this.
Yeah. And is it in Quebec? Is this a big industry, and would it be a significant impact on the economy of the province, or on a lot of people, if the industry just went out of business?
I don't think so. I think it's only a few hundred jobs. There's one mine that's left, and that's doing major production. And in fact, that now needs a major subsidy from the Canadian government. So what one of the points of controversy right now is whether the Canadian taxpayers are going to further subsidize an industry that is exporting this known carcinogen overseas. Should be interesting to see how this plays out. Mm.
We got a question here. It came in by email, and I don't know if this is something that you can answer, but the person here is interested in the asbestos in vermiculite, which is a thing that I think a lot of people who do gardening are used to as being a constituent of some potting soils and soilless mixtures that you use to grow plants. And indeed, the person says that they're a gardener and that they've heard that the vermiculite is found where there is asbestos and that all vermiculite is contaminated with asbestos. And is that something that you know anything about?
I wish it was. I'm sorry. My vermiculite expertise is pretty wanting. We'd have to research that, but again, sounds like it's something worth checking out.
Okay, well, and I'm sure that probably is something that person could. I hate to give an answer like that, but all questions cannot be answered. But I'm sure that if you can do some further research in that on that on the web, if you're interested. And of course, other people who are listening, by the way, if you have questions, comments, you can be involved in the conversation. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk at illinois.edu. Russia, as I mentioned, is the biggest producer of asbestos, and I think it must be close to about half of all the asbestos in the world comes from Russia.
We found we were looking at a Google map. I remember with my reporters trying to get in our mind's eye what these places actually look like, and their biggest mine is half the size of Manhattan. That's the scale that these productions are on. So the debate has hardly touched Russia. They are by far the major producer of asbestos. They're also a major user of it. Russia produces nearly half of the world's supply, which is holding steady at about 2 million metric tons annually. And we have partners around the world, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, and we work with Novaya Gazeta, a major opposition newspaper in Moscow, and they did a bunch of research for us on the industry there, and just found virtually no opposition. Some of that is a commentary on the plight of opposition and non-government organizations in today's Russia, but some of it is I think it just hasn't been an issue in Russia. In fact, we found that there was much more debate in places like China and India, where it's starting to get more and more notice. In Brazil, it's now been its use and sale have been banned in three of the most populous states, and there's a bill introduced in the Brazilian Congress for a full ban.
And that, I think, in Brazil, is that not the result of real grassroots activism on the issue?
There are hundreds and hundreds of anti-asbestos groups that have sprung up around the world. Some are activist and consumer groups. Some stem out of labor organizations. There's one in Brazil that was founded by a labor inspector who we profile. We call her the Brockovich of Brazil because she's been likened to a Brazilian Aaron Brockovich trying to save workers from asbestos poisoning.
Hmm. Well, again, questions are welcome. We're coming into about our last 10 minutes of focus, this hour of focus. And if you're interested in calling in, you have questions, you can do that. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Our guest is Dave Kaplan. He is director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. So this is something that is part of the Center for Public Integrity, and it is on the web. And if you're interested in reading this report that we've talked about, that is the report on global asbestos trade dangers in the dust, you can go to their website and take a look at it. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL, will-talk@illinois.edu. We have another caller here, someone in Champaign to talk with on line one right here. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes.
I had a question. Was there a point in time when the material in brake lining where asbestos was substantially removed? Or I did a fair amount of brake work in the 70s, in that range, somewhere in there. I'm just wondering, was asbestos in those brake linings, or...?
I'm afraid it was, yeah, because it was such a useful material to use in friction products like brakes. It was widely used at the time. I think it wasn't until the 90s. I'd have to double check that they really started replacing them in brake products. And in fact, they didn't have warnings on brake products until well into the 70s, and critics say that even those warnings were inadequate. I'm just looking at our story here. NIOSH, National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, in 75 issued a bulletin warning that brake work could produce significant exposures to asbestos, and telling employers they needed to put dust control measures in place, and that nearly a million workers were at risk. I mean, think about all the mechanics that were doing that were changing brake pads, you know, they had meetings with Ford and GM and Johns Manville, which was then the biggest manufacturer of asbestos products. But you know what? We interviewed mechanics like you who said there were never any warning labels on the brake shoe boxes that said it was harmful. Nobody talked about it, and there are cases now in the courts where attorneys have brought class action suits against the car makers because of these exact exposures.
I guess a related question or follow-up question, is there a range of effects or symptoms, and do you know some people's systems react better than others to this, and is it, you know, down the road, long range, or is it immediate, or what kind of health issues crop up there?
You know, I'm not a medical expert. If you're concerned, I would urge you to seek medical attention from experts in the field, and you can find that pretty easily. In fact, you can look at our stories online. That'll give you some leads. I can tell you that there's a long lag time after asbestos exposure to developing the diseases. I mean, they can take 20, 30 years, which is why scientists are warning that this fast-growing use in developing countries is going to produce epidemics, but not for 15 to 30 years. We're going to see a huge spike in the future. So I guess what we wanted to do with this series was just kind of fire a warning shot, saying the industry has spent all this money. Here's where it's growing, folks. And independent scientists, the World Health Organization, International Labor Organization, are saying this thing's an impending disaster.
I see. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll go on here. Champaign County, next, line number two. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I'm afraid I haven't listened to the very beginning, so maybe this is worth reprising anyway. And that's this consortium you're with, and it's regarded as a new model, I guess. And it seems that corporate influence on the press is why there haven't been exposés. I don't know if you'd agree with that about this issue earlier. It seems to me there's a story, and I don't know, maybe you do treat it, of R.W. Grace and the special pleadings that they were allowed to have in I guess that was all through the Reagan and the Bush 1 era. So I guess that's enough, and I'll hang on and listen.
All right. Well, I'm so glad you asked about us. We're a nonprofit news organization. As our host said, ICIJ, the International Consortium, was founded by the Center for Public Integrity. The center's 20 years old. We were founded here in Washington, D.C. to basically do the stories the rest of the media somehow weren't getting to do. Stuff on accountability, on politics of power, on money in politics, on environmental dumping, and what American companies do overseas, arms traffickers, and on and on. There's no shortage of these stories that you need, you know, real strong accountability journalism focused on, and too often the media, especially these days with how much battering we've taken from a bad economy and changing models and a lack of ad money. We need to look for new models. Well, ICIJ and the center are one part of the solution, perhaps. We get foundation money and individual contributions, and it allows us, you know, in this case, we teamed up with the BBC and put an 8-country team together and spent 9 months looking at how the asbestos industry, it spent $100 million to export this deadly product. It's hard to find that kind of opportunity in the news media today. We had a great relationship with the BBC. I think ultimately we reached more than 30 million people in 20 languages with this series. So I'm just grateful we can still do journalism like that.
The other point I brought up is the idea of the political untouchability of this story through the through the years. Do you have something to say on that? And as a suggestion for a follow-up story, I understand that Shell Oil is there's a rumor they're going to be exonerated from the major culpability of their devastating parts of Nigeria by a UN commission, and it seems like somebody ought to be seeing whether they actually did a legitimate study of that that issue. Thanks.
Well, that's pretty interesting. This Shell story sounds like it's worth checking into. I know there's people who've been following their record in Nigeria, but there's just not enough of us doing this kind of reporting. We have a couple journalists on the ground in Nigeria now on another story, which I can't talk about, but rest assured this is something we'd like to look at. More generally, in terms of stories that get done and don't get done, sometimes I've been in the business for 30 years. I think there are some, political decisions. If you're owned by GE, you're probably not going to be reporting on the nuclear industry, which they're deeply involved in. On the other hand, a lot of this is just, we've lost thousands and thousands of newsroom jobs in the last 5 years. The economy's really taken a toll on serious journalism. The model's changing. People want everything very quickly. They want it in Facebook-sized chunks, and it's gotten much harder to do long-term deep-dive journalism. And this tradition kind of started here in the U.S. with the old muckrakers 100 years ago. So we're fighting to keep it alive. There are some bright spots, and we're going to continue to fight the good fight.
All right. Let's talk with another caller here in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Yes. Am I on?
Yes.
Yeah. My question is, there seemed like a double standard even in this country about asbestos. For example, I can take asbestos myself from, say, a floor tile in a basement or something like that. I take the floor tiles out, and which is a size 8x8, and I put them in the dumpster, and I don't have to do anything to them. But if I'm at work and I'm working in an industry, we take the floor tile, they rope off the area, they bring in the asbestos people, and it has to be disposed of properly and into the right places. Yet I can take mine, the same tile, from my house and put them in the dumpster, and there's no rules against that. And the other question, then I have another question about smoking related to if somebody smokes and is exposed to asbestos.
Okay, not sure I can handle the second question with what I know, but the first one's very interesting. Do we have a double standard? I think occupationally, an industry knows that they need to be much more protective of workers because they've had I think $70 billion in litigation costs because of this industry, and they're not eager to go any further down that path. The asbestos industry ended up being a dead end in the U.S. because it had so many liabilities. What happens in your own home, I guess, is occurring on a slightly different plane. I don't know, maybe a loophole in the legislation in the regs that's worth checking out. I can tell you, in Europe, they dealt with this in a more comprehensive way. They just made it illegal to sell asbestos products anymore. You can still, if your car has old asbestos brake linings, I think you can still import a new set. But at least people know now they need to be quite careful when they're replaced.
Yeah, but in this case, I mean, the landfills. If I take asbestos tile from my house, I can put them in the landfill, basically, just put them in the garbage, and the poor garbage man will be exposed to it as well.
As I say, it sounds like a loophole in the regs. Yeah, I would urge people to dispose of this stuff carefully, and I think contractors know when they're working with asbestos-related tiles and insulation that they need to be quite careful because it doesn't take much of this stuff to cause real damage.
All right.
And regarding smoking, I mean, the fact that I mean, I've heard this many times before. You know, asbestos exposure by itself is not as bad as if you smoke and exposed to asbestos.
It's an interesting point. Most of these asbestos-related diseases do seem to attack the lungs, so I imagine anything you're adding to your lung burden is not going to be good for your health. But you know, I'm not a scientific expert on this. There's people who could address that a lot better than I can.
We just have a couple minutes left. Do you think that, or do people in the public health field internationally think that it's actually realistic to talk about an international ban?
Indeed, they do. The World Health Organization has called for one. I think other public health associations have been quite outspoken on the issue. The Canadian Public Health Association has called for an end to Canada's exports, and there are groups working in the U.S. for a full ban. It's quite a hot issue internationally, and I think we were surprised the more we got into the issue, because I think, you know, there's a tendency on the part of Americans to think, well, it's kind of a dead issue, it's been litigated, and people now know it's a hazardous product that you don't use much. So we were quite surprised to find that the industry was spending $100 million to promote this, and that its use was growing by you know, as much as 30% annually in a place like India. You know, by getting this out in as many languages as we did, and perhaps doing a bit of public education, maybe we did some good here.
Yeah, and I wonder, were you at all surprised it seemed that there was a lot of interest in this story and your project here in the United States? Were you surprised in as much as this really was not something that touched directly the United States? There's no American export industry of asbestos anymore, and it hasn't, perhaps as some people I'm sure would say, it hasn't got the level of attention here that it should have.
Yeah, well, it's true. There's no direct American involvement in the exports. I mean, we don't have an asbestos industry like we used to. You know, this country used to use so much asbestos, and it's just a fraction of what it is. You know, China used more than 500,000 metric tons of asbestos in 2007. That's 350 times what America did that year. Mm-hmm. Give you an idea of how things have shifted. So, but we'll have to see. You know, there are some U.S. connections. We were still working on you know, some of the big Russian companies have some strange P.O. boxes in the U.S. that we wanted to investigate a little further, and certainly Canada next door has a major role in the market. And then we have the whole unfortunate history in the U.S. Of as many as 500,000 Americans may end up dying because of asbestos when all said and done. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that because we're here at the end of this first hour of the show. I do want to say, though, again, if people are interested in reading in detail this story that we've been talking about here, you should go to the website of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which is associated with the Center for Public Integrity, and look at the report, Dangers in the Dust, Inside the Global Asbestos Trade. And you can see a good overview and then a number of more detailed reports that have to do with asbestos in a number of countries. And I think that you'll find some interesting things there. Our guest, Dave Kaplan, is director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. And Mr. Kaplan, thanks very much for giving us some time today.
I want to thank you and your listeners for such great questions, and wish everybody well.
WILL programs are made possible by Community Concierge Magazine. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and maps, as well as a business and shopping guide. Community Concierge Magazine is distributed throughout East Central Illinois and always presents the Champaign-Urbana area at its best.
We'll take a break here as we usually do. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Claudia Nugent. She is a gastroenterologist at Christie Clinic in Champaign. We'll talk about digestive issues. First, though, we'll break for an update on the market. Stay tuned.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're in Kansas City and at the Chicago Board of Trade in Chicago. Prices are under pressure as they have been since the opening bell this morning. Let's look at particulars in Kansas City. September wheat at 707 and a quarter, down 9 3/4. December, 722 and 3/4, down 8 3/4. September wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade at 679, down 13 and a quarter. December, 712